Welcome to Earth Harmony Home. I'm Deborah Gerke. EarthHarmonyHome.com. It's your world. Dream it. Be it. Today we're so excited to welcome Billy Ortiz back with us again. When Billy was with us last time, she talked to us all about how dreaming basically led her on a path of becoming a certified dream worker. And that's what she does today, almost 11 years later. And today, Billy's with us to talk to us about projective dream work. Welcome back, Billy.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
So projective dream work. I mean, we can relate to the word dream work and we can relate to the word projective. So I guess we can imagine what that might mean. But I'd love to hear it from you. Why projective dream work and what does that mean?
Well, basically, projective dream work is taking on the dream in the if it were my dream format. So in other words, instead of saying, well, Deborah, I think your dream means that you have a problem with your mother or something like that.
You.
I know.
That sounds harsh.
Immediately, it feels like I've accused you of something, that I've made you feel ashamed with just one statement. But if I worded in the, well, Deborah, if this were my dream, I might think that it possibly has something to do with my relationship with my mother. And then the minute I put it into the I form and I keep everything mostly in the first person as I'm saying it, it gives you a chance as a dreamer to be able to either take that or leave it. And so the whole idea of projective is that everyone takes on the dream as though it were their dream too. So we, 'cause whenever somebody tells a dream, the only thing we can do is have an imagined version of it in our head. We weren't there when the dream happened. But if someone tells me a dream, I have to actually go into imagining what it was like to be in that dream. And so basically it's a way for any of us to become part of the dream too, so that everybody's dream becomes everybody's dream, rather than it feeling separate and divided between the two people. It becomes a communal experience.
Well, and that's interesting. And we did talk about the sense of community that comes about when you're part of a dream group in our first episode. So this kind of adds another layer to that. As you're describing that, I'm understanding that in the same way that we talked about it being a universal language of sorts, because it's metaphorical, that when you have a dream, if we talk about it as a group, what you're saying is that dream is also representative of something in me, possibly, if I resonate with that.
That's exactly it, because that's a big reason why we do it in the projective form too, so that it really does truly become a group experience, that everyone in the group hears themselves saying the comment about the example I used, the mother. The minute I say that, then that means it's true for me too. So then I get the benefit of the work as well. It doesn't end up being just one person sitting on the hot seat and all of us are just badgering them with our comments and.
So can you help us reframe that in the language that you would use in projective dream work? That example that you did with your mother, can you frame it in the projective dream work sense? How would you say it?
Right. I would just say, well, if this were my dream, I would think that it might mean that it has something to do with my mother. So I put everything in the eye, pretending that it is my dream. And some of the language we use is like, well, in my version of the dream, or if this were my dream, or imagining myself having this dream, those kind of things. And then that way it allows the dreamer to still own the experience of having their dream. And I'm not making any assumptions about what it is or what their dream means or what it doesn't mean. They get a chance to feel it from the inside out, from hearing it from someone else.
That's really, really cool. It reminds me, the way that you're phrasing the sentences reminds me a lot of compassionate communication, or what some people call nonviolent communication. Because what you're doing is taking yourself into account and saying, well, if this were me.
Exactly.
And that allows the other person a sense of relief. There's not a sense of friction or resistance there, because it's up to them how they receive that.
Exactly. That's it. That's exactly it.
Wow. That's cool. So Jeremy Taylor is a teacher of yours, and I'm guessing a mentor as well as a friend.
Exactly. Yeah. He started out as my teacher, as the story I told in the other episode. I I've learned a lot from him. And then over the years, I bring him in twice a year for weekend dream work retreats, where he helps us. We spend the whole weekend working on dreams together. And then over the years, yes, of course, he's become my friend too. So he's become a very important person as far as support and friendship he's a colleague too. So anyway, I've learned a tremendous deal from him, but he developed what's called the DreamWork Toolkit. And that's the guidelines that we all follow, those of us who are certified in Jeremy's program. And the DreamWork Toolkit basically is just 6 guidelines that Jeremy has found are true for all dreams, and a way for all of us to, on the outset, have an understanding of how we're going to go about the work.
So you're going to share those with us, I hope.
Right. So the the first one is, all dreams speak a universal language and come in the service of health and wholeness. And there is no such thing as a bad dream. Only a dream that sometimes comes in with the dramatic effect in order to get our attention. So when someone says, well, that dream, I don't want to even remember it, it was just so horrible. Actually, that dream is a very important dream to remember, because it's coming in that way with that dramatic negative tone. That way I have no chance but to remember it. I mean, I don't have any choice. It's going to be in my face all day.
And a comforting thing with that could be what you, again, shared in the first episode, that dreams are not to be taken literally. This is always a metaphorical sense. So even though it might seem really bad, the message that lies within it?
Well, it's basically because we're all predisposed to recognize danger. And our survival has depended on that, to recognize danger and move away from it or avoid it. And so if the dream comes in with a dangerous kind of feel to it, then we're already going to remember it immediately. And one of the things that I've learned over the years that Jeremy's taught too is that that type of dream is coming in saying, wake up and pay attention, because there's a survival issue at stake. Something really needs to be taken care of immediately. And that's my message from the dream world, to act on it now.
Okay. And what's next on the list?
Well, then the other thing is, you know, one of the most important parts about this type of dream work is only a dreamer can say for sure what his or her dream means. And this understanding comes from what we call the aha experience. So in other words, I can say 100 things about your dream, and it's up to you to take or leave any of those comments. But every once in a while, there might be something of, oh, that could be it. And that feeling of that shift of consciousness, that spark, that tingle up the back or shiver, whatever it might be, is the unconscious reminding us that, oh, I already knew this about myself, mm-hmm. but I just forgot it at some point. Mm-hmm. So it's just this way of waking that up. But only a dreamer can really say for sure what that is.
So that's really about resonance, right? That's about when you say that aha or that tingling or that shiver, those are all indicators in our body of if we're in harmonic resonance, if we're vibing, you know, if we have a vibration that matches what we're hearing, what we're experiencing.
I always say it passes the tingle test for me.
I love that. You know what I call it? A lot of people call them chicken skin or goosebumps. I call it truth bumps.
Exactly. Yeah, I have another friend that calls them truth bumps too. That's great.
Yeah. So that's cool. And I think that's really important for people to be in touch with that, to understand and realize that we have those built-in messages that are alive in our systems all the time. Not only with our dreams, but with everything in our life, helping us to realize and recognize when something rings true for us, what that means.
That's very correct. That's another part of this work that I love so much, is it wakes up that intuitive sense too, for me and for the dreamers, for everyone involved. It gives us a chance to go, you know, of course we talk a lot during the groups to try to get to the information that we're trying to get to, but ultimately it's that intuitive sense that guides us, mm-hmm. of, oh, that fits or that doesn't fit. And honestly, I have to tell you, one of the most pointless things in the world is to argue with a dreamer about what their dream might be. Because I could say, oh, yeah, I'm sure it means this, I'm sure it means this. Well, until the dreamer says, yeah, that's it, doesn't matter.
That's true, because they're not feeling it.
That's it.
And so even if it is it to somebody else, if it's not true for you, then it's not something that's going to stimulate any kind of shift or change for you either, right?
Well, that's why the projective method is so powerful in groups. Because the person making a projection, if they're very insistent on that projection and the dreamer says, well, you know, it doesn't really fit for me, then I, as the moderator of the group, have to say, well, but for Mike or Brenda or Jim, it fit for them. Mm-hmm. So that means that's their projection, and then they can own it and realize, oh, that's what the dream was trying to tell them.
Uh-huh. And that's cool. That's a big part of the group experience, is that it's a way that you can almost feel that you're being in service to the group by sharing your dream, because the dream may not be just for you in that particular circumstance, but what somebody else projected, it could resonate for them.
Exactly. And I truly believe, just from the experience that I've had over all these years, that no dream is shared with a group unless it's meant, you know, it's meant to be shared with that group. In other words, the people in the room are there because they need to hear that particular dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the cosmic piece of it, really the part that goes beyond just our daily lives. It's not, how does that work? I don't know. I tell people all the time, I say, I never know what I'm going to be presented with. I just show up for work,
right,
to see what happens.
Right. I love that. That's the stuff that makes me tingle, for sure. Okay, what's number three on that list?
Okay, well, three is, you know, there's no such thing as a dream with only one meaning. And all dream images are overdetermined and have multiple meanings and layers of significance. And this is why, again, group projective dream work is very, very powerful. Because if I have a group of, say, 15 people, then we're going to have 15 different perspectives on the dream. And each time we get to a symbol, we have to realize that a lot of those symbols almost always carry a light and a dark at the same time. So I have to look at the positive side of it, but I also have to look at what's the other side of that too. And that expands the experience to say, because we live in a world of duality. We like to split things apart. We like to say, well, that's the good thing, and that over there is the bad thing. And really, the world is made up very differently than that. And everyone's familiar with the yin-yang symbol. If you remember in the yin-yang symbol, there's a little dot of white in the black part, and there's a little dot of black in the white part. And that's a reminder that, you know, things are not as split apart as we think they are. They're kind of a blend of everything. So the reason that we talk about this understanding that there's, you know, there's no such thing as a dream with only one meaning is to expand our consciousness to understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important. And understanding that, like you said, good and bad. Bad doesn't mean, oh, don't go there, I can't look at it. You know, I think there's a certain power, if you will, of being able to embrace the shadow side and being able to see that as a teacher.
Well, that's a big, big part of dream work. A big part of dream work is what often shows up in dreams is that shadow side that I've denied, the part that I've all of a sudden I've called it not me. And the not me is the one that's trying to get my attention. And it's trying to say, well, you know, this is a part that you might have forgotten about. But that's often when we get chased in a dream.
Mm.
Or we get that feeling of anxiety, like something's about to approach from behind. Often that is shadow material. And I hate to say always, but almost always that is something that I've denied about myself and cast off into the shadow that's ready to reintegrate and become part of me again.
And it might not be something scary.
That's just it. It's a hard thing to realize when we're dreaming because it feels very real.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I don't use the word reality for that reason, because I say waking reality and dream reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm in the dream world, it sure as heck feels real.
Yeah, right.
So there's a part of me that if I could become conscious in the dream and realize, oh, that thing that's chasing me, that's probably something I need. And if I turn around and deal with it, it suddenly will not become as threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be something, it is more than likely something that I need.
Well, and I don't know, hopefully I'm not getting ahead of where we are on the list, but this is reminding me of something else that you and I talked about prior to getting together for everyone to listen. was, oh my goodness, now I'm forgetting it. That's so funny. Go on, it'll come back.
Well, it might be this one, which would be kind of funny.
That will be funny.
Number four, no dream comes to just to tell you what you already know, and all dreams break new ground and invite you to new understandings and insights.
Well, that definitely helped bring it back.
Okay.
So we'll go here just for a quick sec before it leaves again, because it might. You never know what'll happen. So you had mentioned to me that sometimes the things that resurface are things that we've forgotten, like forgotten creativities or forgotten inspirations. So is it possible that sometimes when we feel something maybe sneaking up on us from behind in a dream or chasing us, that it's drawing our attention to something like that, which could actually be a gift?
Exactly. The example I use is like, imagine that I'm 5 years old and I love to paint, and I'm finger painting like crazy one time in kindergarten, and I get a little overexcited. And so I go past the paper that's taped on the table and I start painting the table. And then the angry kindergarten teacher comes up and gets very mad at me and says, "Whoa, you know, Billy, why did you paint the table?" And all of a sudden I shrink in that moment. And that 5-year-old who had all that joy of discovery and excitement and creativity suddenly shrinks and disappears and goes into the shadow. Because that part of me then doesn't feel comfortable in the world anymore. I lost all my enthusiasm at that time. I lose all my, you know, joy and for that particular activity. So say fast forward 40 years from then, I'm 45 years old, and all of a sudden I have a dream that reminds me of this painting experience. It has some sort of clue about it. And that might be what's chasing me. Maybe the artist is chasing me. Maybe the artist wants to come back into my life. It's safe now. I'm no longer, their kindergarten teacher isn't there any longer. My psyche doesn't know that. My unconscious doesn't know that completely, because it put that away to protect it so that it wouldn't be damaged. So now it's the joy of midlife is I get to reclaim all that.
Wow. So now with those explanations, did that go in deep enough with number four, or is there more to share there?
Well, I think the only last thing I want to say about the no dream comes to tell us what we already know is, this is something that's very humbling for me as a dream worker, because there can be a place where any of us who are really experienced at this work can say, well, I think I know what this dream means. But of course, I know only one layer of it. I'll never get to the depth of it. And I tend to speak in metaphor. So here's another story that illustrates that. It's like having a piece of pie, and I say, a beautiful piece of peach pie, and I eat the top crust and I say, wow, that was really yummy. Well, of course, I haven't gotten anywhere near to the real juice of it. I haven't gotten anywhere near to any of the goodies that are there. So I have to remind myself that there's no way I'm going to ever know what all my dreams mean. I have to take my dream to another dream worker or a group or whatever and remind myself it doesn't come to tell me what I already know.
That's awesome. Okay, next one on the list.
Well, the number five we've already pretty much covered about, if it were my dream, is we make the agreement on the outset that we're going to always term, you know, all our comments and the if it were my dream, my imagined version of the dream, if I were the person having this dream, however I want to say it. And I, as the facilitator, that's my biggest job, because it's so easy to start out and say, if it were my dream, I think you should do this.
Kind of takes it out of that frame a little bit, huh?
And I've seen people do that many, many, many times.
So the more correct version might be, if it were my dream, I might do this.
Exactly.
Just keep it in your frame.
Because our entire lives are projection. Everything that we do and say is a projection. Anything that I think in the outside world, I might say, well, I think that you should buy a new car. Well, immediately that's a projection. I've just made a statement saying that I think you should buy a new car. And it's like, well, it's really up to the person. So what happens to all of us who do this work a lot is that type of language blends out into the rest of our lives. So in other words, I would say, well, Deborah, if it were me, I might think you might want to buy a new car. No, I did it wrong. There, see, I slipped myself. If it were me, I might think about buying a new car. Mm-hmm. So there's it just helps even with day-to-day communication because none of us can make decisions for other people.
Right. Yeah, I love that. And that's one of the things I think we touched on a little bit in the prior episode, too. For anybody who's listening, by the way, that didn't catch that first episode, make sure you check the archives for that because we keep referencing it. And there was tons of good stuff in that episode, too. And what the point was compassionate communication. I can see this as I'm listening with you. It just makes so much sense how this tool of looking at our dreams and being a dream worker absolutely would support us in so many other areas of our life.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And it does, doing it regularly and giving it concentration and honoring the dreams and paying attention really does help for the other things that you're talking about with just regular daily communications with other people because I have to realize I cannot make the assumptions for the other person. I have to really put myself in their position. I have to really think about it from looking at it from their skin out instead of my skin. And that way, if I constantly do that, that brings us to the understanding of how much we really are all alike. Mm-hmm. And we just have more of a compassionate understanding for everybody else.
Yeah. And as you're talking about that, I'm wondering how emotions play a role in this because I could imagine that it could get really emotional and keeping that in the frame of that projective or compassionate communication as well. Like if we're looking at a dream and suddenly I notice that I'm feeling inside myself, I'm feeling a sense of deep sadness or something like that. How do you work with that or how do you deal with that? How would one express that?
Well, yes, it can be very, very emotional. I've seen dreamers come to huge epiphanies in their lives that certainly you can see the emotional shift right in front of your eyes. I think the best, one of my favorite ways to work is in groups because when there is the group there is that support for when that emotion comes up, everyone else can share with them. Maybe we're all having a teary eyes as the person is experiencing what they're going through. There's also a lot of joy too. Joy and sadness or grief might all come out in any dream group, any moment. It's just a matter of honoring that and realizing that that's really what the dream was trying to tell me to begin with. Maybe it was trying to get me to unearth this emotion that had gotten kind of stuck somewhere along the line.
So sometimes it's about release.
A lot of times it is. And in fact, I dream a lot about I dream about this too, but I work a lot with people who dream a lot about heavy rains and thunderstorms.
Yeah.
And this is a one metaphor that a lot of times means something inside of me wants to release this emotion.
That's interesting. I noticed that. I've recognized that in my own dreams, and it seems to be, it'd be interesting if I did record, because I fall in and out of actually writing down and journaling my dreams. But it'd be interesting to really pay attention to when that happens, because it seems like there will be a certain time of year where I'll have those kinds of dreams.
Right. And that's why it's very good to keep a journal, because then I could make what's called day notes right next to the dream and say, well, this dream came on the heels of the anniversary of my friend's death or whatever, or it comes on the heels of remembering, story that I a terrible thing that happened to me in high school or something. And so those memories might then trigger the dream so that I can release that emotion that was trapped by that experience.
That's cool. What's the next one on the list? I think we're getting to the end of our toolbox.
Well, the last one is just all about safety. And it's basically that on the outset, all of us will come to the agreement that no dreamer will be specifically identified outside of the group. And so in other words, we don't use their name and saying, name and their first and last name, saying, well, the other day Deborah came with this dream and this I might because it is very personal and emotional work, as you mentioned. So, you know, it's okay to talk about, well, you know, the other day I was in a dream group and this was one of the dreams that was shared, because it's important to explain the experience to other people. But no, every dreamer has to feel safe that their anonymity is protected.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's another piece to that, is that sometimes there's a place that the dream might get to where the dreamer can say, look, nothing leaves this room after I share this.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all have to say, okay, that's the agreement, strict confidentiality. Mm-hmm. And then that gives the dreamer the safety and security to be able to share whatever they need to share,
right?
Knowing that we're not going to publish it in the newspaper,
right,
when we're done.
So important, building a field of trust and love and compassion.
That's it.
Yeah, very, very cool. So that's the Dreamworkers Toolkit.
That's it.
Those are the tools that you can utilize to help figure things out.
Well, and I encourage anyone who wants to try this work on their own to try to use this type of method. Anyone can practice dream work. I mean, anyone can decide, well, every other Tuesday I might get together with my friend for coffee and we'll just talk about dreams. And if it happens that you feel like you want to make a comment on the person's dream, try to put it in the If It Were My Dream format. It actually helps so much, because you understand something more about yourself, and then the dreamer can actually take the comment more readily and easily without feeling that they're being accused.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've just started offering teleclasses that people can call in and they can talk about their dreams in that environment. How do you help coach people to be able to do it in this format if they haven't ever done projective dream work before?
Well, it's just a matter of trying to help them to restate their comment. And if someone says it in the you form of address, then I'll just remind them, well, we've made the agreement here that we're all going to use the If It Were My Dream format. And yes, it does take, it's a little more challenging when you're working with a group that isn't familiar with it, but it's actually very easy for people to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And another reason I like this work is because it puts everyone on an equal emotional footing right off the bat.
Right.
So even if you've been doing the work for 10, 11 years or 20 years, or you've just been, that's the first time you've walked into this type of group, you can pick it up immediately.
Mm-hmm. And what if someone does start practicing these things and starts to realize, as you did, as you get more and more into it, that they really feel motivated to have it be a more prevalent part of their life and they want to get some training? Is there a certain, because I know you're certified, so you went through a specific program. Is that something that you can take people through, or where would they find that?
Yes, I help people to become certified themselves, and it's just a matter of there's several segments that it involves. One is looking closely at your own dreams, maybe a minimum of 10 times, and then also working in groups, group of at least five people, going to certain intro workshops that are offered by me and by Jeremy to get sort of the basics. And then also it turns around to the practicum part of the certification, which is working one-on-one with clients and running your own groups. And then having someone supervise you through this process. So you can call me or email or whatever and get feedback as you go along the steps. And it's actually, people can it's a very much a self-study program. So
okay,
it's all up to you how long it's going to take you to complete it.
And so a person could do it individually then? They don't have to have a class of 10 people, or how does that part work?
No, it's like a self-study, you mm-hmm. know, correspondence type course. And so actually I help people from all over the world. And, you know, it's been pretty amazing how many people have been interested in becoming certified. It's a piece that they can add to all their, you know, already existing healing practice. If you're a Reiki practitioner, or if you're a massage therapist, or you know, any type of emotional body work or anything, a lot of the times people spontaneously will share their dreams in those settings.
That's true.
And so and it's nice to have some sort of background to be able to sufficiently and you know, honorably deal with that when it comes up.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Well, once again, Billy, I think that there was so much valuable information that we talked about today. I really appreciate your sharing about projective dream work and how that differs from some of the other dream work possibilities that are out there for us. Mm-hmm. The thing that I really take away that I love the most about this is the piece that makes it unique, I guess, is that communication piece. Mm-hmm. Because I think that that can be so beneficial to all of us in all other aspects of our life, not just when we get together with our family of Dreamworker friends, how it bleeds into the rest of our communication. I really love that. So I appreciate you sharing this with us.
Well, yeah. You're very right. It makes a huge impact on all communications with everyone.
So. Mm-hmm. So for everyone listening, tell them again how they can find you.
Okay. My website is wakeuptoyourdreams.com, and I'm always open to answering general questions about dream work by email, which would be billy@wakeuptoyourdreams.com. And as Deborah mentioned, once a month, the second Wednesday of every month, I have a teleclass where people from all over the country can call in and join us.
That's so cool. And all of the information for that, the number to call in and the code to use is all right on your website.
Just, yes, on the news and events page, there's specific information about all the groups and workshops and teleclass, everything.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate all of you out there listening. Dream well and be well, and make sure that you tune in again for our next episode with Billy, when she's going to talk to all of us out there who might be saying, yeah, this dream stuff's really cool, but it's not for me because I don't remember my dreams, or I don't even think I dream. I happen to have an incredible husband who's pretty sure he doesn't dream most of the time. Well, Billy tells me that there's another story that fits that. So make sure you stay tuned. In our next episode, we'll be talking all about what that's about. If we can't remember our dreams, or we don't think we dream, Billy's got something else to share. So stay tuned. And once again, I'm your host, Deborah Gerke, on earthharmonyhome.com.